do apologize, and this is my less or least favorite format for doing these kinds of things. I will say, you know, the interesting thing about doing a recording like this and sending it on to you is that, you know, what we're missing is just the dynamic of conversation and what I think is the fun part. But honestly, in terms of content, I can tell you what I think you need to know, and I think we'll be fine. Again, I do really hope we're back in the classroom on Friday, because it does help. I do like the dynamics of actual conversation and questions. But for this week, I think it was okay to kind of push off the class, since there was another class already occupying the space we were supposed to be in, but whatever. Because there's a bit of, okay, we're kind of, I mean, we really are sort of wrapping a lot of things up. We're downhill very fast. And that was one of the pieces I was going to share in terms of just some housekeeping, just looking at where we're at. So, you know, as I move on to this sort of, you know, life balance thing that we've talked about, it really starts to lean into, do you have obligations for the future? And then the last week when we come back after Thanksgiving is just, you know, the telling your story. And there's not really a ton of stuff left to cover. It is a little bit more like wrap up. We are really sort of at the end of everything as far as that goes. And in some ways, it's good to do a review and a wrap up and a recap that does provide for me what I think is important is repetition. I know in general we don't like repetition because it's repetitive, but I find it important because oftentimes it is upon the second, the third, or the fourth hearing you go, oh, that's a thing. In fact, right, that is the basis of almost all speech giving is tell them what you're going to say, tell them, and then tell them again what you said, right? You kind of have to go in that three-step repetition piece. And the life-work balance thing that we've talked about in the past is extremely important. I think the very fact that we have had, I think, two prior conversations about it in some way or another speaks to its importance. And the fact that, you know, yet again, I did another conflict facilitation on Monday afternoon, and it was just a generic training, really. I didn't have to facilitate much conflict, but the same thing is true for, you know, live working adults who are 2 and 3 times your age, that they still feel some stress about time management in life. It's just, it's a different level of things. I think the piece to, and again, in terms of what I've looked at so far improves all, you're all on the right track. And like I said, I kind of did myself in the last time I said, yes, everyone do the 9. And oh, it's a lot to read when I have to read 9 comments for 20 some people. So 3 comments this week will be plenty. I don't know that I've commented yet on any of them. I've upvoted a lot, which, just so you understand, if I upvote or, you know, like something you've posted, I think you're very much on the right track. You know, the interesting thing in the first piece or so regarding doctors, and I like that someone used the verb doctoring, that that's a thing, right? And I think I've shared this before, but it's this level of difficulty. The work-life balance, we've talked about it, right? How you sort of manage and maintain for you, your energy, your time, and that does have some relationship to your money and your job or your career or your vocation. And it is absolutely imperative that you manage those for your own well-being. In the realm of doctoring, in the realm of medical professions, I think I've shared with you before, what you do is you do run a significant risk of burnout. That burnout does weird things, like involves or brings into play things like compassion fatigue, which that's not what you want from doctors and nurses, that can't be successful. It further can be complicated in the sense of and this is kind of pulling in a little bit from last week too, right? We have a system that runs truly not super efficiently, but it runs okay. But it runs in the sense of okay that it does put nurses and doctors and others in peculiar positions of decision making at a particular end of life, that it's not just compassion fatigue, it becomes moral distress and moral injury. Those are real things in that profession. But there are similar things in other professions. And so part of what we talked about last week, right, the idea of shared experiences, and particularly with the video, right, when ideas have sex, and you move forward, and you have this sort of great progress and positive forward momentum, that's great. But one of the things that we're not often aware of in the work-life balance is the speed at which that happens. And what I was kind of hinting at was sort of the sacrifice we make such that the system will work. And that's where we often get the real taste of burnout, is you do realize that you're often running at a pace set by something and somebody else. To the extent that you want to say, well, I get that already because I'm an athlete and coach tells me something, or I'm a performer and my director tells me something, or I have a job already, or I have school and my advisor and teachers tell me stuff. That is true, but there's also such a disconnect between all of those that ultimately kind of falls back to you to govern how you spend your time, money, and energy. And, you know, again, we've had that conversation about the work-life balance. What I'm saying is, when you really apply pressure to that, you just add a little heat, it gets worse. And it's not even just about the work-life balance of making sure you go home and do those things at home with your family or your friends or by yourself. It can really make the work life miserable. And I've spoken to people like that, and that's part of what I do, and I do a lot of facilitation, is looking at organizational health. And you will find there are a lot of unhealthy organizations, that it's more common than uncommon. So in this case, when I want to talk about the work-life balance, it is taking that time for you. It is the things we've talked about, but it's also recognizing how in those situations you can really be put under the gun. I knew a guy, I worked with a guy, and I like him, so this is not a horrible criticism, but his email tagline at his company that he put in himself was, if you can't make him see the light, make him feel the heat, right? So his response or attitude towards performance was, if they didn't see your point of view, just apply a bit more pressure. They'll figure it out. And again, not uncommon, pretty common in the corporate world. But those things have tremendous impact. It has impact on mental health and physical health. Excuse me. So, peculiar example in our own little history here. I've lived through a very precarious presidential transition, not quite a decade ago, but it's before Dr. Kerry. And the vice president at the time, who was a very average looking person, average health, average all of the things, but under that particular president's short time here, she developed a lot of health issues. You could see it. It went from, and this, right, this is not saying she did anything right or wrong, right? This is stress, but there's this unusual weight gain. There was weird stresses where she was wearing a brace on one arm because she had carpal tunnel or something, which can happen, but that was like out of the blue. And then when things shifted and kind of went back to normal, and she decided this was not her fit and took a job somewhere else, she looks normal again, right? So this work-life balance can really do a number on you. So a lot of times when we talk about the work life of, you know, do you balance this with your home life, with your friends? I do put in there, you got to balance it with you, because it will have a tremendous impact and toll on you and your mental health, your physical health, and even your psychosocial health. Now, that having been said, right, what are the things that you can do with this? What can you do about this? And there again, I know in the first 8 weeks, there was some conversation with Jim and myself, or maybe in one of the other videos, about the difference between resume virtues and, you know, like eulogy style virtues. And we're going to do something different with that. But the resume virtues, right, I have some. I'm a full professor. I am tenured. I am a division chair. I have been a associate dean. I don't know. There's a bunch of junk I can throw. I've chaired other committees. I don't know. There's a bunch of junk I can put on my resume. And those are resume virtues. Excuse me. But as we've said in the past, right, at your funeral, no one's going to say, oh, and wasn't it fantastic he did that thing, right? It's going to be different sorts of virtues. And there's a really good exercise that I think everyone should go through, and actually it's a pretty standard exercise. Even in some leadership training, depends what you're trying to accomplish, but you'll understand where I'm going with this. One of the things, and again, we may have iterated this at one point, now this is the reiteration. One thing to do is to sort of imagine your own funeral right now. That sounds creepy. There's a whole stoic practice with this, but that's not what I'm getting at. The idea of imagining your own funeral is to think of who is in attendance, who is there. And of course, right, this little exercise changes depending on your age and your time and place in life. If I were to run this exercise right now in my head, you know, people at my funeral would be my wife, my children, other members of my family, my friends, my idiot golfing buddies, right, those people. And when you think of that, the thing that you're supposed to do with this exercise is to think through, wow, out of that group, what are the roles that I play? Well, I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a friend. I'm not a great golfer, but I'm an idiot with my idiot friends. I would imagine there may be, you know, some workplace proximity associates or friends from work that are in attendance. And for them, even those roles are different. For other division chairs, if they came to my funeral, then we would be colleagues. For some faculty, they may just be friends. For some faculty, they may say, well, that was my boss and I was there. Division chair. And what it does is it says I take a lot of roles on as one person. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not the kind of thing that says, oh, that's what leads to burnout. No, that's just called life. That's just called being human. But it does mean I have to think about, well, in those roles, what are my goals? What is the thing I'm trying to accomplish or think that I should be doing with my wife? What is the thing that I should be working on, or what's the project engaged in with my daughters? What is my, and you know, using again some of last week's language, what is this shared experience I think I should have with my family in general? What are those things? What does it mean to sort of be a son, right? Have I done all the right things in those particular roles? Have I been the good friend? Have I been the right friend? And when you do extend that into work, right, you realize those same roles and goals discussions change. It's not the resume. It's not those things that stand at the top. It is a matter of, and I think last week I mentioned Dr. Moses Romano, who I really like. I'll pick on Jim Long today just because I like to pick on Jim. You know, if he were to attend my funeral, we're colleagues as division chairs. You know, that's a question I can imagine right now. Like, am I doing the things that support him as a colleague? Am I, who cares about the title? Am I doing the things that support that colleague? When I think about faculty that work for me, the ones that are in my division, I am the division chair. Do I do all the things that support my faculty members? Am I kind and friendly to other faculty who are not related to me in any particular way as a division or anything else? The roles and goals change radically when you're not talking about your resume, but you talk about the people. Again, going back to our conversation last week, we do get stuck running at the speed of the system, and the speed of the system often is easier to identify in those resume virtues, such that my questions become different. Am I doing all the right things as a division chair? And that means budget, scheduling, faculty evaluations, class observations. It means looking for grant money. It means following up with former students. It means doing assessments on programs. And all of that is not relational. I could say I'm a tenured full professor and say, am I doing all the right things? Am I researching, publishing, teaching? Am I looking at my teaching evaluations? Am I trying to improve the coursework? Again, all of that not relational. I could do that even as the family person, husband, father. Well, am I doing all the right things? Well, I go to work and I bring home a paycheck and we got food to eat every week, so I think we're probably fine. That's not relational. Even with my friends, I could say something like, well, am I doing all the right things? I don't know. I go play golf every other week or every week or probably at once a month right now. It's the weather. Is that the same thing as recognizing there's that space you share in the golf cart or on the golf course together? No. So the peace and the work-life balance isn't always just about maintaining the difference between here's how I spend time at work and here's how I spend time at home, but be very cognizant of your language, that you can think very differently about your work and about your home. On the negative side, if I thought my obligation as a husband was just to bring home a paycheck, I've probably failed in a number of ways. But likewise, if I thought my obligation as a faculty member was just to create schedule books and budgets, I've probably failed in a number of ways. And, you know, your work-life balance, your work life can be immensely better when you realize it's relational. Am I supporting my faculty? When it comes to being that full tenured professor, it's a much better question to say, am I available for my students? Do we have good, healthy interactions? Those kinds of questions. Because those are the things I think that get remembered at eulogies. Those are the things that get remembered at funerals. And those are the things that I think tell me that I'm doing something right. Again, from last week, in all of those, I think we're creating shared experiences. In all of those, we're doing something else. Work does not have to be the enemy, right? And sometimes in the work-life balance conversation, we intentionally or unintentionally sort of frame it as it's the enemy. It's not. But our approach to it can be. And the same could be true of home. You can make home horrible or you can make it great. We're trying to strike that balance.